You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome to the Roto Experts in the Morning, this Sunday edition on this brutally cold day, March 12th, 2017. Had the day off yesterday, so I'm excited to be back. Thank you to Matt Modica for pitching in with George there and getting us to a full show. I heard a bunch of it yesterday. And entertaining. Obviously an entertaining week in sports. I happen to be at various basketball tournaments, enjoying the onset of March Madness and Championship Week, and was equally entertained by watching, reading all of the movement related to the NFL free agency period. So, George, has been an interesting week, to say the least, and World Baseball Classic actually has been pretty interesting as well. It's unfortunate that I haven't been able to watch as much of that as I would like, but nonetheless, it has been an entertaining week in sports.
You see, Mike, you can't say you were off yesterday. You know, Matt and I, we had you on assignment.
I sort of was, really. I would say off from the show duties, but yeah, I was very much not an off day.
Yeah, see, on assignment sounds good. Where's Mike Blewett? He's on assignment.
Was taking in basketball, traveled home yesterday, but I was in Pittsburgh this week. I was in D.C. Any of you that are on my, you know, follow me on Facebook would see that I, you know, I had some fun times. You know, basketball arenas can get old, and when you're in them for 3-4 days straight, but nonetheless, I saw some entertaining basketball, and I'll be dialed in tonight for Selection Sunday. It's really one of my favorite hours of television. It's just, it's exciting to me. I know you're not as dialed in on that particular sport, George, but nonetheless, Selection Sunday, people are filling out brackets, and we'll get started tonight right around 7 o'clock when they release the entirety of the bracket. So, that being said, George, we've had a lot of interesting news, obviously, these last few days. I did listen in to you and Matt a bunch yesterday, and, you know, there's a lot of different questions that have yet to be answered, not the least of which is what the heck was Cleveland doing, but just to give some, I guess, a few updates from maybe where we were at yesterday, and you may have even talked about some of these at some point during the show, but, you know, the second wave of free agency has begun. We saw a lot of the big dominoes fall, and guys got paid, and other guys maybe didn't get exactly what they thought they might get. Terrell Pryor, looking at you. So yesterday, Kendall Wright, obviously a former first-round pick of the Titans, he joins the Bears on a one-year, $4 million deal. So obviously Wright has had some big production early in his career, but due to injuries, lack of production, the market was very soft on him, obviously. So that is a one-year prove-it deal. See if you can be a complimentary receiver, not just in Chicago, but longer term, maybe elsewhere, maybe with Chicago. But a one-year, $4 million deal for Kendall Wright, a guy who in the past has had over 90 catches in a season.
Well, that's not a prove-it deal at all. This is a you're blah.
Yeah,
I mean, the prove-it deal is Terrell Pryor. That's a prove-it deal. Jeffrey, in some cases, a prove-it deal as well, since he only signed for 1 year. But Kendall Wright's a, okay, good for you, good luck. I mean, I don't think anybody cares. We already know, Mike Glennon, Kendall Wright, is that going to be the big combination? Certainly not. Kendall Wright has had some good years, but those are in the past. Fantasy-wise, this is, nothing to see here.
Yeah, I mean, they got Kendall Wright, Kevin White, Cam Meredith, Bellamy. That's probably your receiving core right now. I'd imagine they look to add somebody else in the draft, but it's not going to be a first-round pick. I think that's pretty obvious. So a couple defensive moves being done, but Geno Smith visiting with the Giants. Latavius Murray. Looks like he's on the tour, the running back tour, the free agency tour. obviously, we know about Martellus Bennett being signed, and Green Bay also signed former Rams tight end Lance Kendricks. So they got that position shored up solely through free agency, which obviously the Packers aren't a team. You know, the Martellus Bennett signing is interesting in that the Packers are a team that is very dedicated, the most dedicated team, to developing their own players. Drafting, developing, bringing in UDFAs and developing them over time. So for them to go out and get somebody like Martellus Bennett, as they did with Jerry Cook, and as they even do here with Lance Kendricks, they're addressing that position solely through free agency lately.
Yes, yeah, you mentioned Green Bay is a team that generally signs their own, doesn't go outside the organization all that much. They did here. I guess rightfully so. Jared Cook maybe overplayed his hand. And now he's not with Green Bay anymore. He actually wanted a decent amount of money. I guess trying to live off the one catch against the Cowboys that won the game. Didn't work out for him. You had Bennett now, makes that receiving core even better. Right? I mean, Cobb, who was disappointing. You got Adams, who stepped up. Nelson, who was great. And now you had Bennett. Bennett's now, in my mind, a top eight tight end coming the next season fantasy-wise.
Yeah, I would say so. Jared Cook, I was nonplussed about that signing in Green Bay. He will become known for that catch, but frankly, it's the throw as much as it's the catch, right? So he'll have a place in Packers history, but a very small place since they didn't end up winning a title. So Martellus Bennett, a good addition there. I think you're right. I think he's immediately up there in that top eight discussion. I would say that, yes, we did have high expectations for him at times in New England, but to his credit, he played the role that he was asked to play there for his one season. When Gronk got hurt, I think they needed a lot more blocking out of Bennett. Obviously, the Patriots patched it together in a number of different ways throughout the season and through the playoffs, utilizing different assets there in order to get the job done, whether it's White or Hogan or whomever. And it didn't necessarily fall in the tight end position. So, you know, in general, there's a few teams that have been obviously extremely active, not the least of which is the Patriots. People are talking about them winning the offseason. I know you talked about Cook some yesterday, but they made another addition. They brought in former Ravens defensive lineman Lawrence Guy on a four-year contract worth up to $20 million. NFL.com had him ranked as the number 55 free agency. So while it's not a guy in fantasy circles that we'll talk about, I think it just speaks to how the Patriots knew they were going to lose some guys in Logan Ryan, in Jabal Sherrod. They've gone out and they have turned over this roster a bunch, really, in just a few short days. The Brandon Cooks trade will obviously be the highlight thus far, but they are still continuing to work through any losses that they might have and are really trying to shore up here the next couple of years. At this stage, they just won the Super Bowl, and they are very much staying on top with making some strong moves.
Yeah, we talked about it a bunch yesterday, and the Patriots are playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they think three, four steps ahead constantly. And the Brandon Cooks deal is just a fantastic one. They would have the 32nd pick in the first round, so rather than that, they get Cooks. They give up their third also, but get back a fourth, so that's a minimal giveaway there. But I'll take Cooks for my 32nd pick every day of the week. I mean, it's pretty easy there to do that. It makes think about that offense now. If everyone's healthy, I mean, you got Gronk will be back. We should be thinking we'll be back. Edelman, Cooks. I mean, you got maybe they need a legitimate running back. You know, somebody who's actually a running, not a scat back, not a third down back. Maybe they need that. But other than that, you know, you got White, you got Lewis, you got Hogan. I mean, wow. It's just all set there. Tom Brady has a smorgasbord of guys to throw to now.
And this is with, you know, obviously, Gronk is more of a question mark now than he's ever been, right? These injuries have started to pile up. But if Gronk stays healthy, they're even scarier. They did this whole playoff run without the services of Rob Gronkowski, who, you know, on any given day is the best tight end in football and is the Patriots' best weapon. So the Brandon Cooks thing, why do you feel like what is your take on why the Saints were so motivated to get rid of him?
I think they were I'm sure there's some behind-the-scenes stuff. You know, we all remember the game last year where they won a million to nothing, yet Cook still complained. And no coach likes, you know, you win the game by 40 points and you're complaining you didn't get enough touches. No coach likes that. And so maybe there's something like that behind the scenes where he's just a pain in the neck. But in the end, I think it has more to come down to they can't afford him once he's a free agent. You know, the cap is just not there. And they need the help on defense. How do you get help? Extra picks. You know, they can't go out and sign big-name free agents. Either the same thing, cap problems. So how do you do it? Through the draft. And now they've got an extra pick to do it. They move up a full round and another later on in the mid-rounds. So I get it. You know, if you weren't going to sign him anyway, better to trade him. You know, you're still going to score 1,000 points with Drew Brees in that offense. I don't think it's going to slow down all that much. Does it hurt? Of course it hurts. You lose Brandon Cooks. It's going to hurt. But the offense isn't going to suffer all that much. You need to help the defense. This is one way to go about it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You and I talked about it last week. He was going to have more value now, right, because he's locked into a contract still. It wouldn't shock me in the slightest if the Patriots just use Brandon Cooks until his initial contract is done with, and then they'll move on, because they typically don't play in the wide receiver market like that. They just utilize guys for a year. Look what they did with Martellus Bennett. There's a lot said about Martellus Bennett. He's very outspoken, and maybe he can be a seemingly divisive kind of force in the locker room, but to his credit, in New England, he played the role exactly the way they needed him to. He never complained about him not getting a lot of touches, and he won a Super Bowl, and he moves on, and he was like thankful about it. I thought it was really respectful. The only question I have about Martellus Bennett, and I like the fact that he's outspoken, that kind of stuff doesn't bother me, but this will be his fifth team, right? We've seen him with the Cowboys, the Giants, the Bears, the Pats, and now the Packers. So your best players don't move around like that.
I brought that up with Matt yesterday. I mean, for as good a player he is, you said it, you know, Cowboys got rid of him. Man, 1 month ago, they had Jason Witten, but he was a problem. Not a major problem, but he was outspoken, complained about things, complained about not getting the ball enough. You got a Hall of Famer in front of you, Chief. I mean, what are you going to do? Went to the Giants, didn't last long there. Went to the Bears, didn't last long there. Patriots, okay, that was never designed to be long term. Nothing he could do there. But still, it's four teams. You know, if you're so good, why aren't you sticking around? Why didn't anybody give you that second contract?
Yeah, it's curious, but he still is a good player. Maybe he could have been, or should be, the top tight end or one of the top tight ends. It just hasn't happened. And honestly, the guy's enjoying a pretty productive career and just comes off a Super Bowl win. So we'll see. You and I both like his chances as he moves on to Green Bay. Now, one thing, and I want to talk about this like after the break, but I think what's interesting, we knew that the dominoes had to fall in the QB sweepstakes in order to see how teams were going to line up. And in some ways, the lower profile player movement at that position has impacted the greater landscape. So, you know, we have Osweiler move, and the rumors are that they're going to just try to flip him somewhere. But at that contract, and who's desperate enough to do it is the real question. I think the Browns got taken. I think they're probably laughing at other teams that don't quite understand, or fans or analysts like us that don't understand exactly what they're trying to do, but they paid a lot of money for a second-round pick, effectively. So we're going to see how that shakes out. But, you know, what is the market really for Osweiler? Like, is there any market without him restructuring? There's effectively no market. And even if he does restructure, these teams that were potential landing spots for a guy like that are I don't really see any that are likely to go out and do that. Be it the Jets, the Bears, obviously, the Niners, and all of these other teams that might have been an option for him, I think the doors are closed for now. You know, we'll see if a restructure can happen, and we'll see if the Browns have to incentivize somebody to now take him off their hands.
So let me get this straight. You don't like the deal on Cleveland's point of view?
Of course not.
And I think you're in the minority here. I mean, for Cleveland, I think you're looking at this the wrong way. They don't care about Osweiler. It made no difference for them whether he makes it, doesn't make it, whether anyone's interested or not. They can get rid of him after this year. Yes, they took on $16 million cap hit. They knew that going in. They have well over $100 million in cap room available. You know, so that's no big deal to them. They have to get to the minimum threshold anyway. This will help do that. They may not have been able to do that otherwise. Someone was going to have to get overpaid. So why not overpay for a quarterback who, A, all right, you got nobody else at quarterback, so it doesn't really hurt there. And B, you got a second-round pick out of it.
Here,
I mean,
well, they also gave
I have
a fourth,
no problem for this.
They also gave a fourth back, correct?
Yes, they got a sixth.
So here's the thing. At the end of the day, this team is still rebuilding, so it's just monopoly money when we're talking about the $16 million to some extent, correct?
Correct.
So in that sense, I'm not going to beat them up over that. All I'm saying is that the deal that's on the table, I actually don't think they had to give a pick back. I think they did the Texans a solid. It's a home run for the Texans in getting rid of him, getting him off the books. Now people will say, well, what the hell are they going to do? Well, you know, the quarterback position was a question mark. It remains so. So they'll have to address it one way or the other. I thought, obviously, when the Osweiler transaction first happened, that it was sure to be Romo, but that appears to not be the case. In any event, we'll continue to see.
Well, it is the case,
you think,
but
so?
they're not going to trade for him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that Dallas, Houston, and Denver, they're all playing. They're all bluffing. They're all playing poker.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to blink first? They're all they're probably all overplaying their hands right now. You know, Dallas. What's going on with Dallas? I think Jerry Jones did tell Tony Romo on Tuesday that he was going to be released, or told the agent that they were going to release him. Sometime between Tuesday or whatever and by Thursday about 2 p.m., in that 48 hours, someone in the Dallas organization, and we'd heard about this for weeks, if not months, got Jerry Jones' ear and finally convinced him, hey, why are we giving up this guy for free? You know, and listen, I get it, but as Matt and I discussed yesterday in probably detail, is that what pick for Dallas is worth it to take that entire cap hit this season? A fourth or fifth round pick, yes, it's something for Romo, but is it worth taking $24 million cap hit this season?
No way.
That's the problem. Right. So yeah. What pick is worth it, Mike? I mean, if you're a GM of the Cowboys, what pick is worth it to take that hit this season? I think Matt and I came down to a second, and no one's giving up a second. It's just not how your best case scenario is probably a fourth, with that a conditional goes down to a third if he reaches all the incentives, you know, makes the playoffs, something like that. And even that is iffy if that's worth it, because a third from Houston or Denver is a late third. So you're talking a top 90 pick.
True. So we'll continue to explore this and a bunch of the other free agency moves. We'll talk a little bit about what happened last night at the WBC and a few other news items in the fantasy world and beyond. So it's Mike and George for the next 3 hours on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. George and I here, taking you through all the fantasy sports news of the day. And to continue our discussion, George, a little bit on the quarterback shuffle. So, you know, there's a bunch of teams that we had listed, and you and I talked about it a couple of weeks back, that are still sort of that were looking for their potential solutions, either for this year or long term. You know what the Bears did with Mike Glennon? So cross them off the list. The Niners had no QBs on the roster, so they signed Brian Hoyer and Matt Barkley. And you think, still, and I think we discussed this a couple of weeks ago, the Niners were, of those top three picks, the most likely to take a quarterback, and I still think that remains the case, yes?
You would think. I mean, the Niners could also be thinking like this. And they did sign Brian Hoyer, yippee-yay. He could get you through the year. Let's say, once again, there's just no quarterback coming out this year that you really like at number two, but there's a great, you know, the war daddy pass rusher, Mike, whatever, you know, the great player there. You know, from your roster, let's face it, boys and girls, we're going to suck this season too. You know, we're getting another top three, top five, maybe number one overall. I think Matt and I went over this yesterday. What team is worse than the 49ers right now? Cleveland?
Yeah, that's it. That's the only one.
Jets?
by the end, yeah, the Jets actually could be now because they've jettisoned so many people.
Right.
No pun intended. So,
what's the worst case? You get the third pick overall, and even that. I think San Fran right now is the worst team in the NFL. Jets are certainly, I think, close. I think Cleveland's actually done some decent moves here. So but they're not a good team. They're not a playoff contender. But I don't know if I'm going to put them in contention for number one overall. So San Fran could be. You know, I believe next year is a better year for quarterbacks. So they could say, you know what, we're going to take a quarterback in this year's draft, but not number two overall. You know, either we'll trade out of number two and get more picks in the first, you know, maybe a second first round. I imagine definitely a second first round pick and some other picks later on, maybe even next year's draft. And we'll take best player available. We're not going to get our quarterback this year because there just is no franchise quarterback, no quarterback we love. Now, I think that scenario makes sense, but let's say Cleveland could do the same exact thing with their number one pick. And they take Miles. They take the best pass rusher, the war daddy Miles Garrett. You know, so they take Miles. So then San Fran really holds. They can take the best quarterback available. Maybe they like, you know, whoever they like, doesn't matter. Or they could trade it away once they get to a team that does believe in a quarterback this year. You know, I think San Fran could end up being in the catbird seat if Cleveland does the same exact thing and keeps their number one to take Miles Garrett.
Right. So it's a great point. And the interesting thing about that is we've been talking so much about the quarterbacks, and the thing that has been the overriding concern is that none of these guys are worthy of top three picks. Are they even worthy of first round picks? And you got two teams at the top that are in long-term rebuild mode and may not necessarily feel an overwhelming amount of pressure to take a quarterback this year. The Niners absolutely could deal that pick. And for somebody that's desperate to snag one of these three quarterbacks, I was about to say two there because Watson and Trubisky seem to have distanced themselves at least somewhat in some people's minds over Kaiser. But that being said, I still think the Niners, if he does like one of these guys, enough, then he'll just slot in there and take somebody to project long term. Now, the irony of all of this regarding the Niners is that the Kirk Cousins to San Francisco thing, in my eyes, isn't dead, whether it's now or long term. If Shanahan is the believer that some people say he is regarding Cousins, then the Niners will just bail on this number two pick at the quarterback position and either look for Jonathan Allen. I think the Browns at this point are sort of not locked in on Garrett, but I think that is what people would suspect is going to happen there, barring a trade of any kind. And frankly, people might trade up to take Garrett too. So they could take Jonathan Allen. That will give them three first-round picks on the defensive line in the last 3 years, I believe, George. You got Arik Armstead, DeForest Buckner, and then it would be Jonathan Allen. So it's strange that all three come from the same unit, but as people often say, you can never have enough defensive linemen.
You can never have enough pass rush. Listen, generally, in the NFL, there's two ways to win. The quarterback over lines, offensive, you know, the trenches, offensive line to take your quarterback to move that pile. You have to control the clock like Dallas does. Over defensive line, make life miserable for the opposing quarterback because they can't move the ball. If the quarterback's running for his life, there's no room to run. Can't score points. So that's a good, nothing wrong with going about that way. It's a difficult decision, really, for Cleveland. Cleveland and San Fran are both in the same situation. They both have top picks. Nobody out there who's really a consent. There's no Andrew Luck out there. You know, the easy choice, number one overall quarterback. It's just not there this year. I think you put it perfectly. If you were just taking best player available, when would the first quarterback really be taken in this draft? Top 20? Top 30? Second round? You know, you can make this argument that there's just no franchise quarterback this year.
Yeah, definitely outside the top 20, I would say so. You got so many good defensive backs in here and a bunch of pass rushers and defensive linemen that's really where you're at. The two weaknesses of this draft are in offensive line and at quarterback. So, I say it's certain that you wouldn't be taking any of those guys in the top 20. Speaking of offensive line, we knew it was going to be a soft market. We knew it was going to be a soft draft for offensive linemen and a relatively soft market as far as the ultimate talent that is on the waiver wire or on the free agency wire in the NFL. But we actually did see some movement. You said you did like some of the moves that the Browns made. They've picked up three offensive linemen here in these first few days: Marcus Martin, J.C. Treader, and then Kevin Zeitler, going from Cincinnati to Cleveland. And he was considered to be one of the better offensive linemen on the market. So not sexy, not even fantasy relevant, but it looks like they are really trying to build up front. And I think them taking this analytical approach, we can debate on the draft and whether they paid too much or whether you like the fact that they got more picks. They are making some moves to build this in the right way, at the very least.
Yeah, they've got a boatload of picks, and they can't trade. They can't hold on to all these picks. They're gonna have to make some trades. You know, trade up, trade multiple picks. I wonder what the Browns, if they're, I don't care what New England says, if they're gearing up to make a run at Garoppolo. You know, I don't think New England would ever get their number one overall, but the 12 overall, a second this season, a second next season, or a 1-2-3, none of this would surprise me. Yeah. And if it's a 1 this year, a 2 this year, and a 3 next year, or some combination of that, I don't think they'll be able to get 2 1s either. But that's what I'm looking at. And if I'm New England, I don't think I could say no to that. I'll say it again. Unless Tom Brady has told Belichick and or Robert Kraft that, hey, one more year, guys. I got one more year in me. Then, you know what, Giselle and I, she wants me to retire. I'm out of here. I'm going to go have fun in the sun here. Unless he said that, and I have a hard time believing that, I mean, Garoppolo's value is only if Brady gets hurt. And I understand that he's a great insurance policy. But are you really planning on franchising him next year to keep him with your team and paying a backup quarterback $18, $20 million? I don't see that. So therefore, you have to, if you want to get some value for him, and you'd be getting a ton of value. That's the key here. You're getting a ton of value. He has to be moved this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, the last article I read was later yesterday about that, and that the asking price from Cleveland would be the number one overall. Obviously,
that's negotiations.
Of course, obviously, you put a line in the sand right now, and you know it's early, it's mid March, so we have another 6 weeks until the draft. So we have some time to come off of that number, and we'll see what happens. It is a curious move if they hang on to him and just let him walk. I do think it's all along this has been a negotiation and driving up the price. And I know Adam Schefter and others have said they're absolutely not trading him. There's no absolutes. Everybody has a price. There's very few players in the league that are untradeable, and certainly Jimmy Garoppolo is not one of those players. So that being said, we'll continue to track that. Now, let's just say Osweiler, to go back to what I was going to say, let's say Osweiler is going to be flipped by the Browns. Who are the reasonable landing spots? It's really the Jets. I suppose you could put the Niners in there if you felt like it. The Chiefs, the Jaguars, like these teams that we all talked about in the past, like they've already made their decisions. The only ones with kind of wide open, flexible quarterback situations are the Niners and the Jets. Houston certainly is, but clearly that's not an option. And I guess you could, if you really wanted to, you could throw Denver in the mix. One of those two teams that we just mentioned is the most likely landing spot for Romo.
He's not going back to Denver. Right. I think we talked about Osweiler. Once again, I mean, it was reported to me that by Adam Schefter, again, that teams did contact Cleveland on Osweiler immediately after they acquired him. Now, everyone's going, oh, no one's going to take on that $16 million. No, of course not. But Cleveland can convert that to bonus money. Once again, they're not afraid of eating the money. You know, they understand they've got a gazillion dollars in cap space. It's not a big deal to them. So they can convert it to a
They were $40 million under the cap this past season, so they're not afraid to, you know, play around with money a little bit.
Right. So they're not worried about that. The question is, is somebody truly interested? What would they give up? You're probably talking a 6th, 7th round pick, somewhere around there. You know, a giveaway. Cleveland want to do that? You know, they might. You know, I don't know. Probably what pick they get probably depends on how much money they'd be willing to eat. Of the $16 million, if they're willing to eat $12 million, I think they could get something for them. Like I said, that 6th, 7th round pick, and they save a little bit of cap room. You know, instead of $16 million, it's for only $4 million. Something like that could certainly happen. You mentioned the teams. Now, there could be a veteran team, a team that you'd be surprised about. But, hey, for a couple of $1 million for a backup, young backup quarterback that thinks they can develop him, you know, somebody may have an offensive coordinator that believes in him, thinks they can fix the problem, that sort of thing. And, you know, for a low price, 6th, 7th round pick, you get a, I mean, I don't want to say established NFL starter, but someone who started in the NFL. I mean, I understand Osweiler was bad last year, and we all know he was bad. But, you know, it's his first year as an NFL starter. You know, you might want to give the guys a break here. Are we really throwing this kid under the bus this early in his career because of one below average season? I mean, don't we need more time? Isn't this why years ago, you know, young guys were backups for a couple of years so they could really learn the NFL? The only way I would really trash this guy is if you see on tape that, you know, everything's wrong about him. His mechanics are wrong. He throws the ball wrong. And you know these can't be fixed. You know, that's different here. But other than that, I can understand why a team might believe that, hey, if we can use him as a backup for a season or two, I can turn this kid around where eventually he'll be a useful NFL starter for us. And at the very least, he's a decent backup here. And I think that could be the key there. He's a backup now. If you view him as that, then taking, you know, giving up a 6th, 7th round pick for someone you know at least has played in the NFL and can play may not be the worst thing on the planet.
I appreciate you taking that side of it, but I would also state that it was his 5th year in the league. He'll be 27 next year. Granted, it was a bumpy flight this year with Houston. I do think some people are iffy on his mechanics. I'm not going to get into all that because it's pointless for us to do it. The reality is I just think that his decision-making ability didn't prove to be good enough for somebody that has been in the league 5 years, trained under Peyton Manning, and you know, the Texans bailed on him after a year, which leads to my last question on him. It was heavily rumored that Bill O'Brien never really wanted Osweiler. It almost led to Bill O'Brien possibly exploring his way to get out of Houston and possibly land at another head coaching job somewhere in the NFL. Do you think that was an owner's decision to put that money on the line for Osweiler, or was that Rick Smith, the GM, taking a shot to see what he could do with him and kind of forcing him on O'Brien?
Here's something no one's talking about. You bring up the right question. You know, we know it wasn't O'Brien. He pretty much made that very clear that he didn't want Osweiler. Wasn't included in the thought process about Osweiler. So was it the job, the owner? I have a hard time believing it's the owner. It wasn't like Osweiler was all like great with Denver, where, oh my God, you know, we got to go out and get this guy. This sounds like the GM who believed, and it just never worked out for whatever reason. So what if Houston implodes here? You know, this is not a good season for them. Someone's getting fired. You know, you're paying Osweiler, or you got rid of Osweiler the 1 year after giving him the bonus money. You still paid that. Now you don't have a quarterback at all. You know, Tom Savage isn't the answer. If you're not, this is why the Tony Romo thing, you know, I've heard from some Houston fans on my Twitter line, and I think they're right. In the end, you've already shown your cards. You got rid of Osweiler. You need a quarterback. Houston, in my mind, is one player away from, I don't know about being New England's level, but let's say they got Romo. Are they the second best team in the AFC? I mean, who's better? Denver can say the same exact thing. Both teams are a quarterback away from being a true threat. You know, in the NFL, you need that. I understand Romo. You're not going to say you're going to play 16 games. You know, I mean, he's not. You know, but as long as he's healthy for the playoffs and plays 12 games, you'll take that. You know, because with Tom Savage, with that defense, if Romo misses 4 games, you should be able to go 2-2 at the very least. And that's, yeah. You know, when Romo plays, you're 9-3 or something like that. With that defense, that running game, a good offensive line, good passing game, you're a really good team. You've shown your cards by getting rid of Osweiler. Playing chicken now with the Cowboys, and Denver for that matter, is dangerous. Because you're sort of assuming, now I assume Dallas releases Romo. I still think that's about what they're going to do. Be a post-June cut. The question is, when do they release him? So you're assuming that Romo's automatically going to you, and that John Elway can't sway him to go to Denver? I think that's dangerous, because, like I said, what if Romo goes to Denver? Or what if Denver, all of a sudden, right after our show, Mike, all right, Jerry Jones, will give you a 3rd-round pick for Romo. And now you don't have him anymore. And then you're going into next season with Tom Savage, Jay Cutler, Geno Smith? Really? Shouldn't you be going for it if you're the Texans? You're a quarterback away. You know, I think they've shown their cards. Denver, I still think, is trying to play a coy here. I think John Elway may have a feeling that Romo would like to go. It's John Elway. You know, Hall of Fame. And Peyton Manning did the same thing. You know, with defense, it's almost the same team as Houston, with the exception of the offensive line. But they've made some upgrades there. So I think it's a fun little storyline for us to keep talking about between these three teams, Dallas, Houston, and Denver. Houston and Denver keep saying, no, we're not giving up anything from Romo. Dallas seemingly wanting something. But in the end, I still think Romo gets released, mainly because, you know, as a fan of the Cowboys, I think I'd rather have that cap hit spread over two seasons, save some money, be able to sign Zach Martin to that big long-term deal, keep that offensive line intact, then get a fourth-round pick for Tony Romo.
Yeah, I totally agree. So we'll keep exploring this and a few other goings-on in the NFL after this. Mike and George, until 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. George and I talking about NFL free agency. One thing, one note, George, yesterday at University of Washington's Pro Day, Sidney Jones, a potential first-round draft pick, sort of pegged middle of the first round by Todd McShay and Mel Kiper, went down doing his defensive back drills, grabbed his left leg, and was ended up being carted off the field. So kind of an unfortunate situation. We hope it's nothing serious. I haven't seen any updates since. So it seemed to be relatively serious in the manner in which they were talking about it. I don't know if it was an Achilles or if it's a knee injury or whatever. Hopefully it's just something minor that he can rehab here over the next couple of months. But if it was significant, that would be a blow for a guy who left school a year early.
I believe, now I'm not the college guy here, but I did read about somebody, and what was his name again? Sidney Jones?
Sidney Jones, yeah.
I'm trying to look it up real quick here, but I believe it was an Achilles, and he's out 6 months. But ouch. I'm trying to check here to make sure. I got it called up now. And come on. Achilles injured yesterday.
Just saw it. Yeah, it's torn Achilles.
6 months.
That's awful. But it is not something you would hope that would be long-term. He's a young guy. This is not rehab for this. Isn't quite as long as it is for an ACL, obviously. But, you know, at this stage, he could be back midseason. You figure something like this is a pup list scenario. You ease him into his first NFL season. I think what's really difficult is just that as a rookie, he's not going to be out there practicing any of the stuff that's being installed with his new team. So that would just make the learning curve basically be happening mid-season, and what can you really expect? Rookie defensive backs in the NFL struggle as it is, so not having the ability to be out there practicing all of this stuff, you can read the playbook a million times, but if you're not out there doing it, it's going to be really difficult for somebody like that.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. You're almost redshirting him this season, because 6 months from right now, put your week one pretty much, week two. That's everything goes right. So you're right. He almost certainly would begin the season on the PUP, which puts him back in, what, week 6 to 8, somewhere in that range. So half the season's gone. You said it. Quarterback is not something you just come out there and play. Not as a rookie. It's difficult. So I think anybody who's drafting, I mean, he would have gone mid-first round. Where does he go now? Second round? Third round? How far does he fall? Because are you giving up two seasons now? And what I mean by that is because season one's pretty much lost to injury. Yeah, he'll play some, but it's lost to injury. So is now next season become his rookie season where he's going to struggle again and maybe not really pay off for you until season three? You know, so that's something that's going to have to be weighed there. I think someone will take a chance late in round two.
I wonder how much that impacts him. If he's a mid-first-round pick, I'm just watching the video of it as we're going. It's brutal. He knew it right away. And I don't think everybody else realized it until the cart came around to get him. So I don't know that it impacts him that much. You know, I mean, Jalen Smith's injury was thought to be potentially career-ending, and Dallas spent a pretty high second-round pick on him. I know you have your struggles with that as a Cowboys fan, but at the same time, he was a very valuable top 5 to 10 type of player.
And if there's one team that'll do it again.
Yeah.
You're talking about the right team. And I mean, yeah. There is always some GM. You're absolutely, and Jerry Jones is that guy who likes to roll the dice. He really does. You know, and I think as a Cali fan, that drives me nuts. But he likes to roll the dice on these players, you know, and thinks he got a steal. Is Jalen Smith going to pay off? I mean, it depends on who you hear. The Cali's like, oh, yeah, the nerve is regenerating, and everyone else says it's not. He's going to have to wear a brace, that it's not going well. You know, that he might play but won't be the same player. It's a difficult thing there. I'll say with the Cowboys, whether or not that was the right thing, really depends on if anybody else would have taken them in the second round. We've heard most teams would know New England was a shot. You know, New England would have made sense taking Jalen Smith because they were a team that could afford to. They were a Super Bowl team anyway.
Plus, they were pretty. They're wealthy at defensive back last year.
Right, it was a luxury pick, and that's and it's different with Jones. He'll heal, right? And I mean, I don't know. I'm not gonna tell you. I'm a doctor. I think so. Pretty much Achilles, you do come back to normal here, so you don't have to all that worry about that. My problem is, are you giving up the two seasons now? That's a lot to give up before you're gonna this pick will pay off for you when half his contract is gone. You know, and then you still got to hope he's going to be that player. So I certainly think he falls out of the first round. You know, could a team take him in the second round? Sure. A team that's strong at cornerback? Absolutely. It doesn't need him to play year one anyway. You know, it doesn't need him to play full-time year one. I could see that. But most teams, that first second-round pick, they expect on the field.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tough deal because we see Jalen Smith dropped a full round, and that was with somebody that everybody knew could not play in 2016. There was thoughts that it could be worse, but they knew for a fact that he wasn't playing last year. Now, with Jones, he could conceivably get on the field here in year one, but as we're talking, it's basically a wash. Who is good enough to take a player in the first round this year and say we know we're going to get close to a zero out of him? You know, he could play half the season. But it's a rookie corner playing half the season. That's risky. So don't know. I don't know who has the luxury to do something like that. I'd say he would not last into the second round almost at all. People would trade up to get him, but it's that currency of the first round pick that would scare teams, right? It's just there's so much on it. People need first round draft picks to contribute right away, with the exception of the quarterback position.
They do. I mean, it really depends on your philosophy here. It's tough. I mean, he's going to miss all OTAs. You said it. All he can do is read his playbook. That's all nice and good. But for a cornerback, the playbook's not all that tough. You know, cover man. See him? Cover him. You know, he's learning your zone defense. That's really it. So the playbook's only going to take him so far. He's got to get on the field and learn. You know, learn to cover the best of the best out here. So it's tough. It's just not. I mean, I don't think it's any position you want. The way you said it, all right, he'll be okay not being on the field. Everybody has to be on the field. But cornerback is really, it's just going to be tough to judge him. I mean, if you would have been mid first round overall, put you in what, pretty much the 15 range, 15 to 20 range?
Yeah.
I mean, would it?
Kiper had him at 16. McShay had him at 13, basically.
Yeah, so he was going to be a top pick with somebody. It's a cornerback. It's valuable. Sort of like the quarterback, right? That's what everybody wants. Pass rushers, covers, and quarterbacks. It's the most valuable things out there. So someone might take a chance earlier than they should on him. But I also wonder if the Jalen Smith of the Cowboys is going to be a learning thing for people. You take these chances, it doesn't always pay off. You know, Jalen Smith is completely different. You mentioned the nerve regeneration was just a completely different injury. Everybody knew that it could be a problem, and it was/is. Jones, you know he's going to heal. So, but first round, I don't see first round it happening in the first round. I think he loses a lot of money, a lot of value here. At best, I think he's going second round.
Yeah, so we'll keep talking about, good luck to Sidney Jones, and hopefully he can still maintain that first-round status. It would just be a bummer for the guy to be a first-team All-Pac-12 selection. He leaves school a year early. He seems to be on the right track of where his value is going to be, and then because of something freaky, he loses that opportunity to be a first-round pick. You only get one shot. But we'll come back, talk a little bit more about the QB shuffle, free agency, and we'll get some baseball in hour number two. Mike and George back after this. Welcome back. Mike and George talking about free agency, what it is the Patriots are doing, because they still have some key pieces from this championship team, George, that have not been locked up or have left. We already talked about, I mentioned earlier, Jabal Sherrod signed elsewhere. Logan Ryan looks like he's signed with the Titans. Dante Hightower remains a free agent, and Malcolm Butler remains a free agent. They signed Stephon Gilmore. So like you said, earlier in the show, the Patriots are playing chess. There's a lot of moving pieces. I just assumed, and probably wrongfully so, because you never assume anything with the Patriots, that Hightower would be their top free agency priority after knowingly letting Chandler Jones go and trading Jamie Collins. My assumption all along was that they knew they were never going to sign Jones. He had an off-the-field incident, and maybe they just knew, period, that he wasn't the best player for their money that they were going to spend. And believe me, Chandler Jones got paid. $80 million is his contract with plenty of guarantees. But Hightower remains here. He's really the best available free agent. If you go to NFL free agency tracker on NFL.com, they have a ranking of, you know, their top 101 players. Obviously, there's some subjectivity to that, but the first three guys are Alshon Jeffrey, Calais Campbell, Brandon Williams. They've all signed. Dante Hightower remains unsigned. So he's probably just going to be on tour now for trying to get the best deal that he can get, whether it's with the Patriots or elsewhere.
Yeah, I think exactly what he's doing here. A little surprised he hadn't signed already. All right, this is not a regular free agent. It's one of the top free agent linebackers out there. We're in, what, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? We're in the fourth day of free agency here. A little surprised he hadn't signed with somebody, which in my mind is an indication that he wants to go back to New England.
I think so, too.
Yeah, that's what I think is happening here. You mentioned Malcolm Butler. They placed the transition tag on Butler, so odds are he's not going anywhere either.
Got it. So it'd be too expensive a price for anybody to pay.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, signing into the big contract and giving up a first-round pick. Could happen. You know, once again, you can make the argument, just like New England made with about getting Brandon Cooks, that a team lower in the first round, Butler's better than any guy you're going to get. Yeah, just the money you got to pay also. And maybe you don't want to take off New England. I don't know if you're thinking that way. But, you know, Atlanta picking 31, even your Steelers at 30, wouldn't be the worst thing on the planet to make a little run here, try and pry him away. New England also signed Stephen Gilmore. So they just think differently than all organizations. You put up the guys they gave away. You know, Collins they traded. Jones they traded. They moved on from guys they didn't want to sign long-term for whatever. Doesn't matter what the reason is. Off-the-field problems, locker room problems, whatever. They knew they weren't going to sign him long term, so they got something for them before they lost him. That's what you bring it full circle. That's why I think Garoppolo is going to get dealt, because they don't let guys go for nothing. Not guys that have value here, unless they know something we don't know. And by when I say that, it becomes to Brady saying, I'm going to retire. That sort of thing there. But to get back to your point, I think Hightower, I think in the end, he's coming back to New England. I think they'll reach an agreement somehow, some way, and he's back.
That's why I agree. They tend to not let guys walk like that. Now, people say, well, Logan Ryan, Jabal Sher just walked. Yeah, but they had already had a deal basically in place with Gilmore to replace Ryan. Butler, they put the transition tag on. The other guys, they knew they weren't going to sign them, so they just got something for them when they could. Now, they didn't get really much for Chandler Jones at all, but it is what it is. They tried to get something. They tried to extract something out of Jonathan Cooper. It didn't work. And they also got a pick out of that, too. So, and Jones was going to sign for money that they knew they weren't going to spend at that position. So, in any event, we'll see what happens with Dante Hightower. A.J. Bouye signs with the Jaguars. The Jaguars have really gone crazy with the money. And
second year in a row.
I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on what they've done? I'll just ask you that as a general question. I don't know if this is going to work. I guess is my point. They continue to spend money. Calais Campbell's a really good player, and A.J. Bouye is one of the top free agency on them. I mean, they signed two of the top five free agents. They also gave money to Barry Church, a few other positions too, Audie Cole, Earl Watford. So they addressed a few other positions. They kept Patrick Omame, and they still sit there obviously with the question mark as to whether or not Bortles can get this thing turned around.
I mean, that's the question, right? Because they're a dark horse team for Tony Romo, if you believe in that, because Tom Coughlin, who's pretty much taken over there, 70 years old. He ain't waiting around 5 years to see things happening here. So they could make a run here. But let's see, you got Bortles. The running game is average with Ivory Yeldon. Receivers are still good. Robinson Hearns, Lee came on last season. Tight end probably needs some work. But you mentioned they're made second year in a row. They're making moves on defense. You know, you got Fowler, Malik Jackson, Calais Campbell on your defensive line. That's a good line. All right, Smith, Puzlovsky, linebacking core is solid. You mentioned Barry Church, Bouye. I mean, Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
The players seem to be there.
Miles.
So this, Miles. I mean, this in my mind all comes down to one position, Bortles. I think Jacksonville. I mean, it's so tough, Mike, because we know Bortles has some talent. This is not Brock Osweiler here. He does have some talent. The question is he going to continue being a Jay Cutler type? Has the arm strength, but going to keep throwing, turning the ball over and not really be that quarterback to lead you to, you know, to win you games. He'll put up some great fantasy numbers, but can he lead you to win games? I think that's what Coughlin has to figure out. Does he have to make, maybe not Romo, but does he have to make a move away from Bortles to even an Alex Smith type that won't lose you games?
Yeah, I mean, general manager Caldwell is obviously been given the go-ahead to go out and continue this spending spree, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But as you know, the Blake Bortles thing, can Doug Marrone get him turned around? Do they have enough offensive linemen to even protect him long-term? So that's 1 hour down, folks. Thank you for joining us this morning, and stay with us. We'll talk a little bit of baseball when we come back after the break. George and I talk a little bit about the WBC. And we'll keep going through free agency. There's too much to talk about. So lots to do in the next 2 hours. Mike and George until 10 o'clock on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.